Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another Wednesday episode of the Monday Night Raw episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Blowski, and everything sucks. Gonna take a little swig of my trademark lemonade here. I got more of it. It was out the last couple of time, made a little grocery delivery. Lemonade, of course, is the official beverage of Sour Graps. It gives me that sour power. All right, that's good. Okay. These episodes have been so long recently, and I'm really tired. So I want to keep this down to less than 90 minutes. Let's shoot for less than 90 minutes, because we did like a 96 minute episode a while back, and that I can't do that anymore. So let's just plow through this thing, okay? Okay. Raw starts out with Randy Orton, and he comes to the ring and he gets to talk about how entitled he is, and I beat this guy and I beat this guy and I beat this guy, and but even if I didn't beat them, I still would be entitled to this match because I'm super entitled. I'm entitled, Randy. And he thinks that because Drew, remember last week how they said that Drew had a skull fracture and there was bleeding in the brain and he was probably going to die. No. By the end of the week, they were like, "No, he's got a little break in the bone of the jaw." And Randy's like, "Well, if he can't compete at Night of Champions, Clash of Champions, Clyde of Champions, Nash of Champions, if he can't compete at Nash of Champions, then he has to give up the belt, because every title must be defended at Nash of Champions." So he says, that if he can't compete, he got to give me the title. And then we hear ambulance sirens. Now, I don't see the logic in this. When a superstar is beat up so bad that they have to go to a local medical facility in the first hour of Raw, and by the main event segment of Raw, they drive the ambulance back to the arena. Well, that has its own mistakes, because I don't think they let you just do that. That's theft of a hospital property. You stole that ambulance. You're not supposed to be able to do that. So that's weird. But at least it kind of makes sense. Like, I just got taken to the hospital. They wouldn't let me leave. So I said, screw this, I'm leaving, and I'm taking this ambulance too. And then they go back to the arena to get their revenge on who put him in the hospital. At least that I can see the through line, even if it has logical fallacies in it. Drew went to the hospital last week. He was treated. They say he's got a hairline jaw fracture. Did he go back to the hospital today, steal an ambulance, and drive it to the arena? Like not today, obviously, Monday. But you know what I'm saying? Like, did he get up that morning and go, you know what? I'd like to make a dramatic entrance. I'm going to go and steal an ambulance. Was there an ambulance just hanging out outside? Well, you know, it's Florida. I was going to say it's the PC and everybody winds up being hurt. Well, that's Full Sail. You know what? Like, WWE has a lot of problems with parking lots. So maybe they just keep an ambulance out there just in case. So maybe that was the one he drove in. It doesn't make a lot of sense, though. Like, I went to the hospital last week. I'm driving an ambulance here now. Like, that doesn't make any sense, guys. So Randy Orton looks like he's seen a ghost. Because Drew McIntyre gets out of the ambulance, and he hits him with a claymore, and Randy Orton's very upset by this. You know how it goes. So Drew leaves, walks up the thing. The Hurt Business is shown being dastardly. They're walking, they're on their suits. They're walking through the back, and they see a janitor. And the janitor says, "Hi, fellas, how you doing?" And MVP says, "What did you say about Shelton's mama?" And they make him say, like, "I didn't say anything about Shelton's mama. So you're calling me a liar." And at that point, I understand you're intimidated, Mr. Janitor, but you got to do the smart thing. But like, "What do you say about Shelton's mama?" "Nothing. So you call me a liar?" "No. So what do you say about Shelton's mama?" "I said she was a lovely woman and obviously did such a great job raising you, Shelton, that you've turned out to be such a wonderful, productive member of society. I'll bet she's very proud of you." And then they would have nothing to say. That's what you should have done, Mr. Janitor. Anyway, so they beat him up. They knee him in the groin. Because that's the thing you do. When you're three giant men, you knee a smaller, fatter fellow in the groin. And then they walk away. This is to prove how dastardly they are. Anyway, so the first match, because that was earlier tonight, the first match is Hurt Business versus Apollo Crews, Ricochet, and Cedric Alexander. The Cedric enters last, and the Hurt Business come out right after him and beat him down. And Ricochet and Crews check on him, but they get into the ring and they're doing the thing. It's a match that goes on pretty well. And this tell Benjamin just runs up and sucker punches Cedric off the apron while Crews is the legal man. So it's a six-man tag. So Cedric reaches up and yanks Ricochet off the apron, tosses him into the barricade, gets in the ring because Crews is very distressed by this. Crews is so distressed. I think that then he hit pay dirt. Doesn't Shelton hit pay dirt on Crews for the win? And then Cedric gives Apollo Crews the lumbar check. And Bobby and Shelton and MVP were not in on this. They are just as shocked as we are. So I'm going to include the later segment along with this. Cedric is the special guest on the MVP's VIP lounge. And he cuts a good promo about why he did it. Like, Ricochet insists on calling himself the one and only. This would carry more weight if you ever really pushed Ricochet and we all knew that was his nickname. Like, if calling Ricochet the one and only was as ubiquitous as calling Roman Reigns Big Dog, it would hold more weight. But I appreciate the sentiment. Why does he call himself one and only when we're a tag team? What about me? What about Raven? Sorry. What about me? What about Cedric? And then Cedric says, "Apollo Crews, I'm getting jumped left and right and beaten down by these three dudes because I'm your friend." Well, then why am I your friend? Why am I risking my career and an injury to myself to protect your title that you had? No, this is stupid. I'm going to join these guys. I guess basically it's if you can't beat them, join them. Right? And that's all well and good. So, I guess we're supposed to think, oh, he turned on his partner, Ricochet, his tag team partner, that he had all of those title reigns with. Right? All those times that they challenged for the titles. Right? All those times that they were within a hair's breadth of becoming number one contenders, right? Like that tag team had a losing streak versus Shane Thorne and Brendan Frank. That was not a good tag team the way you booked them. It could have been an amazing tag team, but you booked them like shit because he didn't fucking care about these two guys. So the idea that Cedric turns on Ricochet and we're supposed to be like, oh no, look what he did to his friend. So, Cedric, Cedric turning on Ricochet is fine. But listen, it was back in fucking July, I believe, that you brought Mustafa Ali back from 7 months off. And you had him tag with Cedric and Ricochet in a six-man tag. He got the victory. He got the pinfall victory in that six-man tag. The following week, he got his ass kicked by Bobby Lashley. And then whenever he's appeared on TV since then, which is sparingly, I'm not counting main event. He's always on main event. But whenever he's appeared on Raw, he's just gotten his ass kicked by Bobby Lashley, basically. So that whole thing with Cedric being recruited by MVP in the Hurt Business, when people say, well, they don't have anything from Mustafa Ali, so no, they had something right here. It was perfect. The three guys together are friends with Apollo Crews. You could do Ricochet, Cedric, and Mustafa Ali. And Ricochet is fed up with this whole thing with Cedric being recruited. He's just pissed about it. And Mustafa Ali says, I mean, this is, again, assuming you had him on TV and let him actually pick up some victories along the way. You have Mustafa say, hey, Ricochet, give me a second. I know Cedric. We've been through a lot. And you have one goddamn segment. This has been sometime in August. We have Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander have a conversation. I said, Ceddy, remember Heart and Soul? Remember that? That run toward WrestleMania? How we brought out the best of each other? I think we can do that again. Now, I mean, I love Ricochet. I think he's great, but I think he wants to be out there. He wants to be the one and only. Let him be the one and only. You and me. Let's do this. And you have them have a couple of matches where they might be number one contenders or not. They lose to certain things or whatever. This would obviously require you having a fucking tag division. We'll get to that in a second. But you have Cedric and Mustafa always talking backstage, reminiscing about their times on 205 Live and how they came up together and how WWE didn't want either of them, but the crowd said, please sign Cedric. And Mustafa Ali had to be a guy who got brought in because somebody else had visa issues or he wouldn't even have been in the Cruiserweight Classic. They didn't want us. Let's prove that they need us. That thing together. And then, all the while, you still have them, Mustafa Ali saying, we got to back up Apollo because it's the right thing to do. And Cedric being like, nah, I get you, fam. I understand. Like, but it's Apollo's battle. Let's let him fight it. And Mustafa Ali, always being the do-gooder, says, we have to take a side here. We have to choose the side of the light. And Cedric reluctantly doing it. And MVP always consistently recruiting. And eventually this happens. But instead of Cedric Alexander turning on Ricochet, who by this point is kind of phased out of the group, he turns on his brother, Mustafa, who came up with him, that they insisted on both being baby faces in that WrestleMania match to see who was going to be the champion after they had to fire Enzo because Enzo. It would have been so much more cathartic to have that history there than you could play on now, where Mustafa Ali has to go. He has to say, you know what? Listen, Cedric, send your boys away. I don't want them. I need to talk to you. What happened? Why did you do this? And Mustafa Ali always trying to play the good guy. Always trying to play the guy who has everybody's best interests at heart. Thinks if he just has a chance to talk to Cedric. Cedric will come back and be a good guy again. And Cedric proves over and over again with the course of his actions that no, that's not going to happen. That's a great storyline. That's a much better storyline than what they're doing. By the way, also within this, Ricochet is firmly entrenched in the U.S. title picture, where he should be at the very least. I mean, they're trying to add weight to this Cedric and Ricochet thing that it just doesn't have. I mean, because of it's their fault. Like, they started teaming together in March. It's September. You had 6 months to do something with Cedric and Ricochet that would mean something when Cedric turns on Ricochet, but you didn't do that. You didn't do that. So it's meaningless now. Meanwhile, main event from last week had a match, Mustafa Ali versus Ricochet, which was a babyface versus babyface match. Ricochet won. But they fist bumped afterwards. Mustafa Ali made him look like $1 trillion like he always does. It's really shitty that they decided we got to do this on main event and not, you know, for a title somewhere. Get all these guys the fuck off of. I mean, at least Cedric now, at least he's now a part of the heel faction that is running the mid card on Raw. Good for him. Good for him. And that's good. Send Ricochet back to NXT and have him bring Ali with him. Or you're deciding just to like get rid of tag teams left and right, or book guys like shit. Maybe you could have a Mustafa Ali and Ricochet tag team that could, you know, also be booked like shit. Let's just be real. So the Street Profits are facing Andrade and Angel Garza again. It's a non-title match, so why the fuck do we care? The match is fine. I don't care. Angel Garza deserted Andrade and Zelina when Retribution attacked last week. Miracle of miracles, Debbie Burnett might actually be dead. We saw her running away from Retribution last week, and we don't know what happened. I hope she's dead in kayfabe. I hope the actual person is fine. I'm sure she may be an actually nice person. I doubt it. But she might be an actually nice person. Her persona involved in Raw is the most grating shit. So I'm so glad she wasn't here tonight. Anyway, Garza and Vega end up arguing at ringside. Andrade, basically just like Garza just pieces out because Vega says, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, fine, I guess you don't need me. And then Andrade loses. And then, hey, hooray, we got, what's a fucking brand split? What does that exist? Is it Survivor Series season already? I mean, technically it is. I mean, anything after SummerSlam is technically Survivor Series. Remember this, friends, when they try and give you the bullshit line of Survivor Series is the one night a year where brand-to-brand competition, in-ring action, blah-de-blah-de-blah. The one night a year where this can happen. On no other night of the year will this happen. Yeah, it's always bullshit, but it's weirdly bullshit from Raw because Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura show up. And they challenge the Street Profits to a match next week on Raw. So the SmackDown guys show up on Raw. Michael Cole says, is the brand to brand invitational back? Oh, like if you don't know Michael, who does? Cesaro. They keep mentioning this. The Street Profits are the longest reigning Raw tag team in years. I keep mentioning this. The reason that they have reigned for such a long time is because you didn't let them defend the fucking belts for like 2 months while they played tiddlywinks with a couple of Vikings. Then the Vikings became best friends with the Street Profits over their shared love of fucking tiddlywinks or whatever. And now the Vikings are backing up other guys. It's a good thing we got those Viking Profits shirts made. So I guess because they beat Andrade and Garza, there's nobody left for them to face because they've just destroyed whatever was left of the Viking Raiders. So the only team that they have left that they can face, the Street Profits, is the team from SmackDown, who has nobody they can face. Now, I can make you a bunch of tag teams. I just made one. Mustafa Ali and Ricochet could be a tag team. Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander could be a tag team. Or Shelton and MVP. Let them free bird the titles. We could do that. You fired a tag team, AOP, which never got a fucking fair shake on Raw. They were great in NXT. I don't know where they're going to... They seem like an Impact type of act, but if they do show up on AEW... If they do show up on AEW, AOP versus FTR versus the Young Bucks for the titles. Just inject it right into my veins. AOP was so underrated. I mean, they got so good so fast. From like 2015 to 2017, they were like, boom! They got so good so fast. And I couldn't get a fair shake. Rezar got hurt. Why wouldn't it make sense for Akam to still be part of Seth Rollins' faction? He could be the muscle. You could have him and Murphy tag together. Murphy and Akam would be a really great like pairing because they don't do any of the same type of moves. You could have Akam like toss guys at Murphy who like hits him with a super kick. It'd be a lot of fun. Why didn't you do that? Said you fired these guys. Jesus. So next week, a champion versus champion match. Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura versus the Street Profits, which is fine, but I really hope neither of these teams, or at least one of the two teams, isn't champion by Survivor Series, because after next week on Raw, I won't need to have seen the match anymore. I will already see it, and I don't need to see it again. There's a stupid sketch involving Akira Tozawa and some ninjas and R-Truth and an invisible friend. I'm sure it's Jimmy, but I missed that. And a ninja's head in a dessert tray. And that's all I'm going to say about it because I want the 24/7 title to just disappear forever. It's a waste of fucking time. It's horrible. It has lost all of its cachet. It's terrible. So they broke up Peyton Royce and Billy Kay for no reason because Vince hates tag teams. That's why he released AOP and why he wouldn't let Akam build himself up as a singles guy, or at least part of another tag team, while Rezar was recuperating. They broke up. Well, they were a tag team, kind of. Ricochet and Alexander. But they might have broken them up to form a new tag team of Alexander and Benjamin. They might have done that. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. We'll have to wait and see. Viking Raiders are just... I don't even know. Garza and Andrade are breaking up. Vince hates tag teams. Because Vince, again, I really believe this. I believe Vince has never had a real friend in his adult life. So he doesn't see the value of friendship. So he doesn't understand why two people would be friends, which is why every tag team breaks up. Every tag team has a horrible falling out because people are inherently bad and shitty to one another. Therefore, you know. Oh, I forgot to mention Adam Pearce, who again is the de facto leader of all the locker rooms and the GM kind of. He asked McIntyre to leave. You're not even cleared to be here, and you attack Randy. And Adam Pearce is, and Drew McIntyre's like, listen, I got my revenge. I'm going to go. We'll see what happens with that. But they did break up Peyton Royce and Billy Kay for no reason. No reason at all. Peyton Royce has new music. It's terrible. It's terrible. It sounds like there's somewhere out there. There's a Patrick Swayze movie from 1996 that nobody saw, and in that movie, he's a detective, and he's going to ask a bartender who works at a strip club for information. About, you know, what went down last night in the alley behind the strip club. And he walks in there, and the music that is playing as the girls dance on the stage is this music that Peyton Royce is walking out to. It's abominable. And she has a match with Billy Kay, and there's no heat to it. I think it, I don't know, because Vince hates friendship and wants everybody to hate each other. I feel like maybe the Iconics argued that they wanted this to be, they were certainly like talking about like whoever wins this match is going to be propelled to stardom. So, which means it's definitely going to be Peyton Royce is going to win the match. But I assumed they were going to build to something where like one of them really turns on the other. But no, Peyton Royce wins the match. She hits her like spinning fisherman neck breaker thing. And then she pins Billy Kay and she helps Billy Kay up and they hug. And it felt like this was Billy Kay's farewell. Like she's not allowed to be here anymore because she and Peyton Royce aren't allowed to be a tag team, but they're still friends, but it's not allowed to be a tag team anymore. And I don't understand why not. It's weird. I don't know. I really can't. I can't get over how much Peyton Royce's new music sucks. It sucks way worse than Keith Lee's new music. So the entire Mysterio family is here. Ray's got a little brace on his arm from his triceps. We know already that Murphy is going to face Dominic because Seth got called away, so he's not there. So it's Murphy on his own versus Dominic one-on-one. And the whole clan is there, including mom and sister. And they go to the ring. And Charlie Caruso interviews them, and familia. That's basically the whole promo. And then Murphy comes up on the Titantron, and he says, "It's all your fault that Seth doesn't like me anymore," says Murphy. And so Ray is like, "It's not our fault that you pledged your allegiance to a son of a bitch." That evil son of a bitch, Rollins. So Murphy wants, like, we're already going to have a match. And I says, it's going to be a street fight. So basically, the only thing that the Dominic does is, like, hardcore match. Hardcore legend, Dominic Mysterio, everybody. And he accepts. But he, like, Dominic, we'll talk about this later. He's really good in the ring. Like, I did not think he was going to be this good. But he's shit on the mic. He has no personality, no panache, no charisma, nothing along those lines. Like, even if he was this good, if he was this good as a young indie wrestler, they never let him on TV in NXT. They might sign him, and they bring him in there, and like, okay, seriously, we got to work on all that. Like, hooray for the stuff you can do in the ring. Good for you. But we need to work on everything else. Because his little thing, like, Dominic says, Murphy, if you try to do anything to my family, it'll be the last breath you ever take. But the way he says, if you try to do anything to my family, Murphy, I swear it will be the last breath you take in or out. So he won't be able to inhale or exhale. Good. Good. I'm glad we established that. Yeah, so Nia and Shayna later tonight are going to have a handicap match, each of them, versus the Riot Squad, which that's new, I suppose. I guess the whole reason is because Nia said, like, each of us could take you on both at the same time. That was on Twitter. So because of that, Adam Pearce had to make these matches, and Shayna's kind of pissed about that. So Drew McIntyre's walking right, Adam Pearce is like, Drew, I told you to leave. You got to leave, dude. Like, you're not cleared to be here. And Drew's like, I left my phone in the ambulance, so I had to go back and get it. But I'm leaving. I'm good. I'm gone. Now we see Asuka and Mickie James versus Lana and Natalya. And this is a thing. It's fine. Like, there's like, oh, hey, But are we going to be able to coexist? I mean, kind of, mostly, I guess. Mickie is going to go up on the top rope and do something, but Asuka tags herself in and chokes out Natalya, right? Lana. And Mickie runs over and pulls Natalya out of the ring so Natalya can't get the save. And then she hits a Mick kick on Natalya. So Asuka versus Mickey is going to be not at Night of Champions, Clash of Champions, Clyde of Champions, Nash of Champions. It's not going to be on Nash of Champions. It's going to be next week on Monday. So, I mean, they're really building up these Raws, trying to make them something special, I suppose. I don't know who's going to face Asuka at Nash of Champions, because remember, every title must be defended. So it's weird that they're just like just doing this now when in a couple of weeks they got to do it again. But fine, cool. I'm always for matches having stakes. It just feel weird though. Hey, guess who's not on Raw again this week? Bianca Belair. You got to be fucking kidding me. You got to be fucking kidding me. You brought Mickie James, listen, I know she's a legend, and I know she can still go. You brought Mickie James's decrepit ass back of what I thought was retirement again to have a match with Asuka, and Bianca Belair can't get on fucking television? I don't even know, man. I don't even know. By the way, I think Mickie James is incredible for her age, but when you have to say for her age, it matters. I mean, I will also say I think Shayna Baszler is for her age too, but I don't think her ass is decrepit. I don't know why I think that. It's like 1 year age difference. Maybe it's because I like watching Shayna Baszler do other stuff. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah. So here's the thing. They're going to do the VIP lounge. And then they do an eight-man tag because the Viking Raiders run out. And so Ricochet and Apollo Crews and the Viking Raiders go start a brawl, and then we come back from the I like the Hurt Business. I do. I like Apollo Crews, and I think the Viking Raiders, although they've been horribly mismanaged with terrible creative on the main roster, are really one of the best tag teams of the last 10 years in the world. And everyone knows that I love Ricochet. And the Hurt Business, especially now that they've got a guy with Cedric Alexander's charisma and moveset, are really fun, top of the mid-card heel faction. So, I am a fan of all eight of these men. You don't need two Hurt Business multi-man tag matches on 1 3-hour Raw. You just don't. You got all these people, Bianca Belair, Mustafa Ali, who can't get on fucking TV, and yet you're eating up like an hour of your 3-hour show with the Hurt Business. Like, they deserve to be on TV every week, but not for an hour. That's preposterous. Now you got me all sour. I gotta have a swig of lemonade. It gives me that sour power. Yeah. Okay. This is your normal run-of-the-mill 8-man tag. Cedric gets to look heelish, and good for him. He hasn't gotten a chance to play that. I like it a lot. Ivar runs the ropes at the end of this big sequence where everybody's doing everything. The big finish of that is Ivar runs the ropes to hit the suicide dive on three of his opponents. He doesn't get a lot of distance clearing the ropes, and he just drops. And as soon as he lands, he throws up the X. And that's never a good sign. So they went right to the finish. I don't know what the finish was, but it wasn't this. Because Ricochet is the legal man, and so is Cedric. He goes to the top. He's going to do the 630, but he has to roll through. He lands on his feet and rolls through. Cedric comes right back with his really awesome Michinoku driver, which lands really hard right on the back of his Ricochet's head. They go for the pin. The ref calls two. Ricochet kicks out at like 2.8. Obviously, even on the replay, Cole is confused. Cole. Phillips is confused. Or is it Cole? I forget. Who is it? Was Phillips there last night? I forget. Oh, Phillips. Cole's on SmackDown, right? I'm so lost. Anyway, whoever's calling the match is like, oh, what a kick out. And they call for the bell. The ref didn't call for the bell. The bell got called for. Somebody called for the damn bell from the back because there are EMTs tending to Ivar. Apparently, Ivar is fine. He landed weird and got a stinger in the back, in his neck and up around his shoulders, which feels like you're paralyzed. So I understand why he panicked and threw up the X. Yeah, that was weird. The announcers kept going on. The commentators kept going on and on about how, I don't know, I think Ricochet kicked out of there. He might have a complaint. Like, no, seriously, there's a man who's legitimately hurt on the side of the ring. They had to go to the finish early. Yeah. So, Charlie Caruso finds McIntyre backstage. McIntyre is walking to the back, and Caruso's like, hey, what are you doing here? Weren't you supposed to leave? He's like, wouldn't you know it? I got the wrong phone. No, I got the right phone. I'm leaving. So, Shane McMahon at Raw Underground, like, is Kevin Owens is facing Aleister Black on Raw Underground. not in an actual ring, not in a match, but in Raw Underground, which is a weird thing that they're starting to do now, I guess. Like, guys settling scores in Raw Underground is like, it's fine. Anyway, Kevin Owens is walking up. He's going to go in there, and he, like, Shane says, it's water under the bridge. And Owens is like, yeah, no, but you're still a jackass, though. But I want to go in there and beat up Aleister Black. So they all go in there. Then we have Randy Orton versus Keith Lee again. It's awesome that they're doing Keith Lee, making him look really good in a program with Randy Orton. But it's not even really Randy Orton's program. Randy Orton's program is Drew McIntyre. So Keith Lee can't even really have a real feud to start out with. I mean, maybe that's the thing that Randy will move into after he loses to Drew, if he loses to Drew. But Keith Lee is made to look great. Orton, like, it's really funny. You could watch the Grizzly Magnum, which is the giant two-handed open palm chop, vertical chop that he does to people, which he did to everybody in NXT, and nobody was knocked off their feet by it. But Randy Orton was in this match, who's a damn sight bigger than Adam Cole. You know what I mean? Orton is selling the earlier super kick from by messing with his jaw a lot. There's a really great moment where Orton tries to do the RKO to Lee, and Lee just stands there. Like, Orton can't pull him down. You know what I mean? Like, grabs him up around the head and just tries to pull him, and Lee just stands there. That was a great move, great maneuver. Later in the match, he goes for another RKO, but Lee is able to, like, back up out of it. And again, Lee's doing all of his really good power work. He looks really good. But eventually, Lee does take an RKO, and he's about to lose the match. This has happened several times now. I know he won at Payback straight up. But the first match he had with Randy Orton, he was about to lose that match. He got RKO'd. He's about to lose that match. But Drew McIntyre, you know, shows up. And last on Raw, he was a most recent episode of Raw. He got RKO'd. He was about to lose that match, and Drew McIntyre saved his ass. Because Drew McIntyre hits a Claymore out of nowhere. You're gonna start seeing me in your nightmares. Orton goes to the back. Adam Pearce is like, hey, McIntyre goes to the back. Adam Pearce is like, what are you doing? Stop it. We check on Orton, who's favoring his jaw. Now, Kevin Owens and Aleister Black beats some jobber, and then Kevin Owens shows up. And so it's immediately just strikes and stuff. And this is the thing I don't love. You have a whole thing where Aleister Black is wearing an eye patch, and it's really dramatic, like fabric across the whole head thing. And he beats the first jobber and then rips it off, and we can see his eye is fine. Like, you could have done something with some makeup or something, like make his eye like all black and blue still, like he's still bruised from it. Or have him fucking wrestle with the goddamn eye patch for a few weeks. But he gave up the being blind angle that he played for a few weeks. He gave it up after beating a jobber on Raw Underground. It just feels like he could have made something more out of it. Anyway, this is a Raw Underground match that starts, goes for a while, we go to commercial, we come back, and we watch the handicap matches in the women's division. While presumably Kevin Owens versus Aleister Black is still going on in Raw Underground. Why is that a thing? Why are you allowed to show us Raw Underground for a while, but too hot for TV. We got to go back and show you something else in the main ring. Well, don't worry. We'll come back and show you more of it later. And they do. That's weird, right? Randy Orton is pissed at Adam Pearce and security. Why is he even here? Orton says, blah, blah, blah. Your word means nothing. So Riot Squad versus Shayna Baszler with Nia Jax standing at ringside. Shayna is firmly in control of almost all of this. And then she's about to do the stomp thing where she wrecks somebody's arm. She just says it stomps on it all weird with the wrist in the wrong position. She's about to do that to Liv, but Nia is like, that's not really impressive, I guess. And Shayna's like, what did you say to me, bitch? Which allows Liv to get out of the maneuver and roll her up and get the pinfall. And I like that Shayna is pissed at Nia and not Liv. And then they go to break again, and they come back from the break. Shane's on the mic doing stuff about this, and Dolph Ziggler is standing there. I love that. That's all he can do now. Dolph is just all he is like a guy at ringside and Raw Underground. That's how far he fell since what Extreme Rules when he got a fucking championship match. And now he's a guy who he's an extra at Raw Underground. That's where Dolph Ziggler is, which is where he belongs. But it really goes to show you probably shouldn't have given that whole fucking title program with Drew McIntyre. Anyway, Owens and Aleister Black are still going at it. Like, they were having a match this whole time while you were making me watch Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax falling apart as a tag team. That's another tag team that's not long for this world. Although, to be fair, Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan have delightful matching gear, and I'm very happy that they're happy. But why are we cutting away from a Kevin Owens and Aleister Black Raw Underground match to show anything else? Just show all of that. That's weird. Most Raw Underground matches last 2 minutes. This one lasted two full commercial breaks and stuff in it. We wind up out at ringside, if that's even a thing, in Raw Underground. And they start fighting off enhancement talents. And we go back to the ring to watch Nia Jax versus the Riot Squad. And that match is fine, but it looks really looking like Nia is going to lose. While Baszler's like, really? Nia is going to lose. She was covered with a pinfall with Liv Morgan after Liv got, like, Liv was going to get a pin on Nia too. But the lights flicker. Oh no, what is it? Is it Retribution? It's Retribution on the Titantron. They've got a logo now. It looks like somebody put a stencil. It's a Retribution that like spray painted it. Yeah, because we're anarchists. We like spray paint. And so it's very dimly lit. But you still see the eyes of the two women in the front row very clearly. One of them is speaking, and that person is Caden Carter. Because I don't know if you know Caden Carter, but if you don't, you can Google her, Kayden. Carter, like it sounds. She's got the most... Obviously, they're her eyes, like distinct. Her eyes are very distinct. You can tell. Those are Caden Carter's eyes. So she's the one who gets to cut the promo. Next to her is Mia Yim. You can tell it's Mia Yim because her eyes are also very distinct. So she has a promo, blah, blah, diddy, blah, right? The Thunderdome. Because, again, they changed their voice. They put the little voice modulator on them. The Thunderdome is only a facade. Before the mountain of screens, it's the same foundation before, the same behemoth that discarded us and left them in a world of fend for themselves with nothing but scraps. There's a man in the back, in the middle, tall guy. When he speaks, they modulate his voice too. The problem is that Donovan Dijak's voice sounds like it's already been modified, so it's obviously Donovan Dijak. And he's we are driven to destroy, to lay waste to every superstar and every fan. If you're a fucking why are you using the goddamn WWE branded shit like superstar? You can say lay waste to everybody in WWE. And every fan, too. Every superstar. Sounds so fucking lame. But you are blind. The fans are blind, and you cannot see what you do not have. But this is my favorite part. It's like some 16-year-old read a little bit of, like, I don't know, H.P. Lovecraft? I don't know. Like some weird horror vibe. Like, the locusts of contempt will feed on you. The locusts of contempt. So a big old swarm of big old grasshoppers is going to get us. Oh no, the grasshoppers is coming. They's going to eat the crops. What the fuck is this? But that's not even the best part. The best part is retribution will seep into the pores of every superstar and every member of your so-called WWE universe. Retribution will seep into my pores? Really? So you're going to give me a bad case of acne. My pores are just, they're so full of retribution. I really need to wash my face more. I need a deep cleansing. Anybody have any Clearasil? Like, what the fuck? So, grasshoppers and pimples. That's what Retribution's playing with here. Ooh, fun. So scary. So scary Retribution is. My God. What are we doing? So, we go away, and we come back. The announcers are talking about Retribution. Oh, my gosh. Who are they? What do they want? Oh, no. Well, they want to give you a pimple. They want to release some grasshoppers, contemptuous grasshoppers, and give you a pimple. I have a pimple right here. I had a pimple in years. Right on the tip of my nose. I look like a teenage daughter in an 80s sitcom. You know that episode where the teenage daughter gets a pimple right before prom night? Oh, the big dance is this weekend. Oh no, I'll have to cover up my whole face so Tommy can't see my pimple. That's what I look like. Retribution! They gave me the pimples! The grasshoppers. The grasshoppers are coming. So scared of the pimples and the grasshoppers. So anyway, that whole Nia and Riot Squad match happened. The promo by Retribution happened. We go to commercial. We come back from commercial. The commentators talk about Retribution. We go backstage. Blonde, not Charlie Caruso, talks to the Mysterio family. Ray's worried. Familia. And then we go back to Raw Underground again. See the conclusion of Kevin Owens and Aleister Black. This match lasted 20 minutes and we saw 5 of it. Why would you do that? Owens shoves Aleister Black off the platform to the outside where he lands on Dabakato. And Owens goes out to get him, shoves Dabakato aside, and throws him back in the ring. And then Dabakato gets in, and he's a huge Uranagi on Kevin Owens. And then a big old choke slam on Aleister Black. And Shane's like, well, that's it. That's the end of it. Because, of course, even when you have a grudge match between Aleister Black and Kevin Owens on Raw Underground, a match that spans three segments, a match that lasts 20 minutes, of which we got to see maybe five, of course, you still have to have an interference finish. Raw Underground shouldn't be called Raw Underground. It should be just called Raw. More Raw. The same shit that we do on Raw, but now with no ring ropes. Now, Randy Orton's backstage. Charlie Caruso is going to interview him. And Drew McIntyre suddenly shows up. He shoves his face up against, like, there's the little makeshift ring that they set up for interviews or whatever. And he shoves his face, his jaw up against the thing. How do you like it, Randy? How do you like it? And so he throws him into the ring and then he waits for Orton to get up and he hits a claymore again. And we go back to commercial. We come back from the commercial. Orton is being loaded into ambulance and driven away. Then we have more on that in a sec. Then we have hardcore legend Dominic Mysterio with his entire family at ringside versus Murphy. He does a couple of amazing spots. He does this huge flying crossbody off the screens, landing on Murphy, and then he does this great thing where but it's actually a really clever spot. Murphy ties him up in the ring ropes like they did weeks ago, and he's going to hit him with a kendo stick, but Ray pulls it away. So Murphy's got to go get another one. So he goes to the other side of the ring, and he lifts up the apron so he can look underneath. Meanwhile, Dominic's mom and sister untie him from the ring ropes. So he runs and does like his dad's baseball slide sunset flip bomb to Murphy through a table. And then he rolls Murphy back in, hits the huge frog splash, which I thought was going to end it, but Murphy kicked out. And then the Mysterio family, I know it's a street fight and it's not really cheating, but the Mysterio family decides to cheat and they all get in the ring and Ray and Dominic beat him with a kendo sticks. Then they tie him up in the ring ropes, Murphy. And then all of them do, like the sister and the mom get in the act too. And they're just beating him with kendo sticks until Murphy just gives up. Like he says, I quit. I'm not going to match anymore. And so that's it. That's the end. You got your retribution on Murphy for his part in what he did to Ray and to Dominic. But they pull him out of the ring ropes, lay him on the ground, and then beat him with kendo sticks for like another minute and a half. So tonight, two nights ago, we got to see Vince's fetish for revenge porn. Drew got punted in the head a couple of times. Well, not really. Randy whiffed on a couple of them. But he got the hairline jaw fracture. So what does he do? He comes back and he gets revenge by kicking Randy in the head a bunch of times. Drew got sent to the hospital. So Drew sends Randy Orton to the hospital. That's the way problems are solved in Vince's world. They got revenge on Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy did a whole bunch of bad stuff to Ray, to Dominic. They beat him with kendo sticks, the whole family, until he quit. And that's the end of the match. The match is over then. So it's legal to beat the guy with kendo sticks during the match. After the match, when the match is over, that's assault. And they kept assaulting him and had everybody in the family do it. And they kept doing it and doing it. They went off the air still doing it. For all we know, Buddy Murphy is still being hit with kendo sticks. You got your revenge. And then going further is just psychotic. But these are good guys. Drew McIntyre is the good guy. We're supposed to like him. Him getting revenge on Orton, hitting him with the Claymore, and then doing it again, that was enough. Doing it a third time just seems like overkill. No, I didn't do enough to you. I won't rest until you've also got a broken jaw and you're also in the hospital. It's just, you don't need to do that. It's weird that they have the evil characters, the evil faction called Retribution, but they haven't really even told us what they're retributing, what they're getting retribution for. Meanwhile, they're the evil characters, Retribution. But they have these two separate acts on the same show who are getting, like, super retribution, too much retribution, but there's no connection to that at all. You beat up Murphy. He quit. That's the end of it. No, you got to keep doing it. Got to keep doing it. It's a thing that happens all the time. It's been happening for years. Heel does a mean thing to the babyface, right? That's step one. Steps 2 through 25 are babyface ruins the life of the heel. Vince loves that shit. There's a movie from the 90s that I really like. It's an independent film called Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. It's a stupid title for a movie. It is also an actual place where Cactus Jack was billed from. From Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Cactus Jack. Bang, bang! It's a crime movie about a bunch of bank robbers that are on the run from the cops. And their car breaks down or whatever near a rest stop, and so they take prisoner this couple in their early 40s who are going through a bad spat in their marriage, and basically hijack their RV and go on another continued crime spree with them. The wife isn't having any of it, but the husband secretly is loving getting to be like this badass criminal guy. And so along the way, I believe some biker dude or something at a gas station or something like shoves the little, you know, nerdy husband guy, punches him or something. So the nerdy husband guy just stabs him. And they have to get back in the RV and all run away because, you know, that's going to attract some attention. And so the head bank robber guy is going, "What did you do? Why did you do that?" And the little 40-ish dad guy goes, "It was self-defense." "No, no, 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 no," says the bank robber, the guy who's got a good head on his shoulders. "No, no, 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 no. Self-defense is I hit you, you hit me back. That's self-defense. I hit you, you hit me. Not I hit you, you kill me. That's not self-defense." In Vince's book, that is self-defense. If you hit me first, I have legal recourse to kill you. You hit me, I get to kill you. That's what Vince believes. That's what he's always believed. Never was it more apparent than this night with Drew and Dominic both getting way more retribution than they needed to get. And also retribution telling me that they're going to attack me with grasshoppers and pimples. So that was Raw. This has been Sour Graps. I have been Alex Pulowski, your host. And this is a t-shirt. It's a Sour Graps logo. You can get it at shop.fightful.com if you want. I mean, you don't have to, but my birthday's coming up. Couple of weeks. Not to get it to me, but like to give it to yourself and then send me a picture of yourself wearing it as a present to me. That might be nice. Anyway, what's going on? Hey, my home state, Oregon, is basically on fire. So much so that the sky glows red at noon. Stay safe, everybody who's out there in the wildfires. It's really fucking scary. I love you guys. But as always, everything sucks.